From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, which means it's time for our weekly reporter roundtable, where we talk about stories making news in different parts of Illinois. Today, we're focusing on Rockford and DeKalb with two reporters from our partner station, WNIJ, Northern Public Radio. We begin with Maria Gardner-Lara. Maria, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Let's start with how national issues, as we've been doing so many weeks, how national issues are playing out here in Illinois. Democratic Congressman Bill Foster hosted a town hall. What was that like?
Oh boy, that was fun. So, you know, you have now, just like we've seen across the country, right? These are rowdy events. Folks are upset. They want answers from their elected officials. And now, another dynamic to this was there were, you know, several interruptions by Palestinian rights protesters. There were five interruptions in total, Brian, and, you know, calling for consistency from the congressman, right? You have, he'll criticize Benjamin Netanyahu and say Israeli prime minister and say he's not someone that can be trusted, but at the same time, vote to support more military aid in funding. So there was that aspect. And then there was people, you know, looking for more action from their congressmen. And what you hear from Representative Foster is a challenge in what to do in terms of he said, I don't have the power to sue the court, right? So there was interesting to see people's reaction. That was, you know, there was some laughter, there was some murmurs as he tried to appease the audience, but definitely a moment of a time of frustration being displayed there, and so that was very interesting to cover.
Yeah, and we've seen this with, like you said, a lot of town halls. It's interesting though, there are so many Democratic members of Congress from Illinois. I think people would, you know, want to take out their frustrations on Republicans too. There just aren't that many, especially in the northern part of the state. Let's turn to, since, I mean, a lot of that was, as you mentioned, about Gaza and Israel. On a related note, there have been some commentators who've been noting that, you know, even as Israel is once again ramping up its military campaign in Gaza, there have not really been protests this year the same way there were last spring. What are you hearing from people who are active in this issue on campus at Northern and in general?
So I spoke with one of the protesters who actually does. Yeah, she'll protest in her community in Rockford, but also on campus. And part of the challenge is that there's been a lot of silencing, a lot of fear. You know, these marches and folks calling for an end to Israel's campaign, they call genocide of Palestinians. They, you know, this includes Jewish Americans, includes members of the LGBTQ community, but the heart of it is a Palestinian community. And this includes folks with different legal status. And so when they see students being, looks like abductions, kidnapping on the streets, then that brings fear and instills hesitancy to speak out on the streets. And so that, you know, that's a part of it. But, you know, so that's what they're saying that they're seeing. And also, you know, it's been a long, you know, this has been going on for a long time now. Not only, you know, one thing I asked the activists, the protesters, you know, it seemed like a long time. You think, well, since about 2 years, but, you know, folks have been, this has been going on for decades that this struggle has going on. So, you know, it may be just a time too of just recouping, but they'll continue on another, you know, it's ups and downs. And there was a lot of energy actually put in Rockford for a ceasefire. So I think there's, you know, it may be a time too of regrouping as they see how else they leverage change. How do they leverage to, you know, seek a ceasefire. And so there was efforts to pass a ceasefire resolution at the city council that didn't pass. And so it's now, you know, a time of regrouping and figuring out how at the local level they can affect change. at
And I know
the
you talked to at
expression
least
stage.
one person who's an American citizen who said they are going to continue protesting because they feel like it's, I don't know, their responsibility or something, or their privilege maybe is a word they might use.
Yes, and that was actually interesting at the last protest, was that there were actually, I saw that there were actually more Americans. So as some folks may step back out of fear, other folks are stepping up. And so I think that's, and what's great about these protests is there's always movement. There's always, you know, these are welcoming spaces for folks to participate and join, you know, that call for a ceasefire, call for an end to the war. And so yeah, there was folks that I had never seen before. I've been covering this for some time, and not but and so it was good to see, it was interesting to see that there were new faces that were being involved. And I think, you know, now seeing too, you know, the stakes are a bit high in protesting when you see again people being detained. There was the case of the you know,
The Tufts University student who was arrested. Yeah,
Tufts,
yeah.
right? Tufts University, but you also have the Columbia University student, right? Here's a permanent resident. You think that you'd be immune to these kind of threat to deportation, and now they're fighting their case in court from being deported. So this really, I really puts a you know, really instills fear, right? I've spoken folks who are here as doctors, folks who have you know, have been here for a long time, and when you see something like this happen, it really instills fear. And even people who are Americans, we see that even Latinos, American citizens, get picked up and put in this deportation cycle. And so it's it'll be interesting. There's actually a protest tomorrow by the same group. And what's happened is now they've created coalitions with another group called All of Us, also from Rockford. So it's it may it's I think what's happening is that they're finding other ways to, you know, you may not have the numbers as you might as you had before, but they're also but there's also strategy in what do you do with those numbers, and how can we be effective with the numbers that we have, and different you know, they'll do different activities as well. It's not always a march on the street that they're using to leverage. Like, and I
Sure.
think one example is that action at Foster's Town Hall, right? So, you know, you have a handful of people interrupt the meeting, and that brings attention in a way that a march may not.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and briefly, because we're short on time, but a bunch of Illinois leaders accompanied Governor J.B. Pritzker on a trade mission to Mexico. The U of I's president, Tim Colleen, was part of the delegation, as was Northern's president, Lisa Freeman. What can you tell us about the trip and Freeman's participation in particular?
Yeah, that was really interesting, Brian. So she recently has been appointed to Intersect Illinois, and their focus is to promote Illinois as a place for businesses to set up shop, whether it's an expansion, whatever it is, but say, hey, come to Illinois. So it's interesting, you know, the timing where you have Trump, President Trump, you know, saying, hey, one way to avoid one of his arguments, like, right, is one way to avoid tariff is like setting up shop in Illinois or in the US, and now you can avoid all this tariff stuff. And so for them to be there and promote Illinois kind of almost helps a little bit. But, you know, so that was interesting. But yeah, there, and one of the things that she's promoting is like, hey, water, our water resource, our workforce, the fact that we have a huge Latino, Mexican community population here in the state, and so then you have a market for your products, right? And so they, in that sense, and it was interesting because I was like, well, what did you come up? Where's the agreement? And it says, you know, they do have the memorandum of agreement with the state of Mexico, you know, it's really building that networking, but building those relationships, and that is not just something that just happens in one visit, but happens over time.
Yeah. All right, Maria Gardner Lara is a reporter with WNIJ, Northern Public Radio. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks.
And it's the 21st show. We're going to continue our local week in review with another WNIJ reporter, this time Peter Medlin, who covers education. Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me back.
All right, let's start with the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation. It has officially gotten back ancestral land in DeKalb County. Say more about that.
Yeah, so this is actually a situation that, I mean, it's been going on for quite some time, but officially last year, the Prairie Band Potawatomi got some of land that they had been working at, they had purchased over the course of years here in DeKalb County, got put into a land trust by the Department of the Interior, which meant that for the first time, you know, ever, the state of Illinois had federally recognized tribal land, which is obviously fascinating from so many perspectives, on top of, you know, literally Illinois being, you know, named after a confederation of Native nations. And this story is, it's fascinating. It actually goes back 175 years in DeKalb County, where this Prairie Band Potawatomi chief named Chief Chabanet, you know, he goes on vacation. He's living on this land in DeKalb County. He goes to visit family because, you know, the Prairie Band Potawatomi had been removed from Illinois and their reservations in Kansas. He goes to visit, and then while he's gone, the federal government illegally sells the land out from underneath him. And so there's this, you know, legal process and, you know, moral argument over the course of, I'm talking literally, you know, almost 200 years to try for the Prairie Band to get this land back. And it finally happened last year, and it was a small amount of land, just about 130 acres. And then just recently, there was legislation at the state level that was signed to restore Chabanas Lake State Park, which is a huge, a large part of that land as well, which is even bigger. It's about 1,500 acres, to restore that land where the state park is back to the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation as well.
Literally shares a name with the man who
exactly, yes.
sold out from under him. All right, well, that is an interesting story. I will say we've had a number of conversations with Chairman Rupnik of the tribe, if people want to look that up on our website, 21stshow.org.
Who is like a fourth-generation great-grandson of Chief Chabanet.
Oh, fascinating. All right, so Peter, you're an education reporter, so I do want to touch on at least one or two stories on your beat. And one that was really, I guess, kind of dispiriting to me is that religious exemptions for the measles vaccine are up 90% over a decade ago. What is this about?
Yeah, so last year, more than 25,000 Illinois students, and this is from both public and private schools, received a religious exemption for the measles vaccine. Obviously, this is something that was on my mind considering, you know, states like Texas are having, you know, their biggest measles outbreak in like 30 years. And so, yeah, we've been seeing a big
increase. And that's the only way, just to be clear, that's the only way you can get out of school vaccine requirements in Illinois.
Yeah. Other states like Texas have this kind of more broad exemption that's like if you have a reason of conscience, but in Illinois, the only way to get outside of it, you can get a medical exemption, but those are really, really rare. The other way is, again, I mentioned this religious exemption where you actually have to fill out a form that cites like why your specific religious beliefs conflict with immunization. And, you know, it's actually, strangely, it's up to the school district itself to decide whether or not your like religious belief in your objection is valid or not, which is kind of a fascinating question. But yes, we dug into it. We saw that 90%, it was a 90% increase over 10 years. And, you know, it's probably not shocking that the Illinois schools with some of the most religious exemptions are religious schools. And you've seen significant increases at, you know, we saw a Christian school in Sherwood and Cook County that had the most exemptions last year. And over the past 5 years, they've gone from 11% of their students getting these exemptions to 30%, whereas others that were 10% to 25% or 1% to 10%. So, you know, again, as those numbers indicate, it's still a minority of families at these schools who are seeking these waivers. Most people do still see value in vaccines. But we're seeing a huge increase and really the question about why that is. And we talked to some folks and really the kind of, you know, obvious answer is COVID there. But, you know, obviously, you know, it goes beyond that. We're talking about not just the COVID vaccine, but the measles vaccine. And so really, it's this story about a kind of more long term distrust in government institutions and by extension, public schools. And so COVID then just kind of becomes this perfect catalyst to weave mistrust of vaccines more clearly into that worldview.
And it probably doesn't help that a noted vaccine skeptic is now in charge of federal health agencies. And I guess we should say the reason this is important is that if you don't have, enough vaccination, broadly speaking, you lose that sort of herd immunity, right? As it's called.
Yeah, they say that it's when vaccination dips, like in a countywide area, dips below 95%, that's when outbreaks become, more and more likely. And like in Gaines County, Texas, where the current outbreak started, the vaccination rate was 82%. So well below that. And, in Illinois, there are only two counties that are at the very, very southern tip of the state that have rates below 90%. So obviously the rates are higher in Illinois than they are in Texas. But, there still are a couple counties in Illinois that are below that threshold.
And obviously for the very, very young who cannot yet get vaccinated, it's a significant danger for them. All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Peter Medlin, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Absolutely. Glad to be here as always.
Peter Medlin is an education reporter at Northern Public Radio, WNIJ, one of our partner stations. Coming up after the break, we're going to be turning to politics, talking with our Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon. But before that, there was an election this week. Are you one of the small minority of Illinois voters who actually turned out to vote in your municipal or maybe school board or township elections? We're going to be talking with Violet Miller of the Chicago Sun-Times about a couple of the most notable races that happened this week. That's coming up after the break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.